procedure itself as modified by what I have told you, that is to say, as illuminated by what I told you last week. This series is exactly parallels the standard procedure which is in the bulletin. Has Jim heard here this morning? Standard procedure, of course, as written in the book, is taking an inventory. Now, you have already seen this last week that there is a point of accessibility which has to be established. Actually, addressing a new pre-clear, the thing to do is to try to take an inventory. And depending on what kind of an inventory you get, starting in at that point on the accessibility chart, which is indicated by your findings on the inventory, or your findings in the first few moments of reverie. In other words, actually this accessibility chart would belong right above step 2. In any event, you try to get an inventory. But as you start working with the pre-clear, you find where he spots on this accessibility chart, and then you know what you do next. Of course, the first thing you do is to establish his position by finding out what his probable sense of reality is. By observing his ability to receive communication from you, and for you to receive communication from him, you would be amazed at the considerable ease of communication which is possible between a person who is not aberrated and a relatively unaberrated auditor. The person, for instance, who has a hard time with what you have just said, the person who says, did your mother ever call you dear? And they say, what did you say about my mother drinking beer? This is not necessarily an indication of deafness. This is a person, perhaps, who Hobson Jobsons all of his words into something else. The person who doesn't get a joke easily. These various things. An estimate of his ability to communicate. Further, an estimate of his ability to tell the truth. And, in addition to that, an estimate of his general reality. It's an interesting thing that these estimates, as rough as they may be, can place your pre-clear on the accessibility chart. If a person is unable to communicate with you easily, well, smoothly, you had better look for communication interruptions. Straight wire, find out what they are. If he is unable to communicate with you, you might say, with perfect visual, perfect hearing, so on, you had better look for communication interruptions in each case. Actually, if a person's engrams have expressed themselves in terms of physiological defect, they might be said to less seriously have expressed themselves in terms of aberration, mental aberration. The person who is expressing it in terms of a physiological defect is fighting back, actually, against an engram. He's not obeying an engram as well as he might be. If he obeyed the engram perfectly, for instance, that had to do with sight, that is mentally, so on, his actual eyesight would probably be all right, but mentally, he wouldn't be able to perceive what he's supposed to perceive. Anybody, for instance, who's wearing glasses is fighting back an engram that says, I can see. And the glasses say, well, I'll be damned if this is true. I can too see. And the fight takes place there, and the engram says, you can't see. And the fellow says, well, I can see, and I'm and pretty blurry, so he hangs glasses on his nose, and he says, "See, I can see." For a little while, he's all right, and then the engram cuts in a little bit tougher, and it says, "You see, I said you couldn't see." And the glasses deteriorate, you might say, the eyes deteriorate. The ophthalmologist can tell you all about how an eye normally deteriorates because of the neurological decay and deterioration attendant to the stress of modern living and automobile horns or something. That's a lot of bunk. What actually takes place is that the engram that is saying you can't see wins a little bit again. And then the person gets thicker lenses. And for a while, 20/20 vision. And then after a while, this engram says, cuts it out, and thicker glasses for a while, 20/20 vision. That's the way it goes. You all know that eyesight goes into this so-called dwindling spiral. But I'm afraid that the neurological deterioration and decay of the optic nerve is something you will find only in books on structure, and they're all outmoded now. Anybody who wants to start picking up engrams about his eyesight, for instance, will find that his eyesight starts coming back. Sometimes he'll hit right into the center of what's interrupting his eyesight, and his eyesight will come back, bing. A very startled psychiatrist, for instance, in the East, named Turner, had an auditor who let him get into an engram and didn't pull him out of it. This engram had to do with a knitting needle through the left eye. And the thing was in re-stimulation. For several days, the psychiatrist went around with a deteriorating optic nerve. In fact, it got so deteriorated that he went practically blind in this eye, and in addition to that, it ulcerated. The eye ulcerated and suppurated and was in very, very serious condition. So much so that he stayed home from the office, and because the director of training in Elizabeth wanted to get a relative out of a sanitarium and needed the aid and assistance of the psychiatrist, he went over and worked him for about 5 hours. He found the rest of this engram and knocked out the chronic somatic there. And this psychiatrist always had a very weak left eye. In addition to that, he evidently pulled up some engrams that had to do with communication breaks. I just said simply, can't see. Here, physiologically, we had a reason why he couldn't see, a knitting needle through the eye, and then in addition to that, we had some engrams that said he couldn't see. Got the psychiatrist back up to present time again, and his eye had been all bandaged up, and he took off the bandage, and there was no ulcer, and there was no suppuration, and the psychiatrist put on his glasses and couldn't see through this lens, and went into the bathroom and heated up the plastic and dropped the lens out of the thing and put his glasses on, and then he could see. This eye was perfect. It had taken place that fast. One of the strange things that happens is occasionally a wart or something will disappear without a scar. The fellow will have a wart on his hand, something like that, and you'll go into a little processing, and 2 or 3 days later, he'll notice he has no wart. There's no scar. Occasionally, in other words, the whole trouble is so thoroughly wrapped up in one engram that the erasure of that engram will permit the body to go into a terrific resurgence. Now, the speed with which the body can heal is, as far as I'm concerned, a matter of lots of question about it. I've seen it react swiftly, and I've seen it react rather slowly. What I'm getting at here is that you come back to this very much on the groove, is the thing which was suppressing the eyesight there, the thing which was making it deteriorate, is he was still trying to see. And the engram and the injury was saying, you can't see. And it was this fight between I, in trying to go on living, you might say, and the engram, which said, you can't have this part of living, which caused a physiological deterioration. Those people who hasn't enough attention units left to say, I want to go on living, they don't have any chronic somatics. This has been a matter of grave upset to some people in past schools of mental therapy, because they would notice somebody's neurosis suddenly express itself in terms of dermatitis, they would say. They saw the intimate connection between the neurosis and the dermatitis, and the neurosis would go away and up would come the dermatitis. And then they would get rid of the dermatitis, but this fellow would develop sinusitis. Actually, what they're doing is more or less moving the person around on the track and breaking his dramatization. And they break his dramatization on one, you see, and then come back on another one. Fascinating business. A person, in other words, could have a dramatization broken on engram after engram after engram and show up with this chronic somatic and that chronic somatic and the other chronic somatic. It's very, very fascinating. Now, the main thing that you would look for would not be indicated by the chronic somatic, which you see, a pair of glasses on the nose and so forth. That then you're not looking for that specifically. To some slight degree, you can straight wire that, but that isn't the real one that you're looking for. The tough one will be the one which is not being fought. It'll be in the field of thought, and it will not be expressing itself physiologically. However, even a pair of glasses or a little bit of bad hearing, something like that, those things are things that you would be alert toward. But what you would be more alert toward is the person who consistently confuses words. Let's take the field of communication again. Consistently mishears. Consistently missees. Now let's take somebody who walks into a room and is in the room for a moment or two and then whirls around suddenly and was just sure they saw somebody sitting in the chair. That's the case of ding, 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 here comes the wagon as far as sight is concerned. That says, specifically, you're always seeing things and so on. A person who thinks somebody has just walked up behind him, for instance, he's having a bad time with both communication and reality. A person who has difficulties of this nature, in other words, not your physiologically expressed difficulties, is the person to whom you would address particularly straight wire on the field of communication. Now, communication is a very interesting subject. The first thing, then, as you begin your scout for accessibility, would be to look over this communication situation and the rest of them, the general affinity this person has for people and his sense of reality. And you'd probably test him out also by putting him into reverie. Sometimes you'll find enough cases which are just in beautiful shape to be run that you actually should put them into reverie. Test them out. Save you racking your brains a lot on some of these cases. Then you'll know about what the state of the case is, because you won't know accurately until you get the person in reverie. There's nothing like a little attempt to run down track to do a diagnosis for you. Let's send him back to yesterday, and he sits down there at the table eating a steak that he says he had yesterday, and only there's no steak and there's no table, and it was last week that he had steak all of a sudden. And you say, well, let's go back to the time when you were a little boy, and well, he's a little boy, all right, but there he is. He's watching this little boy he's plastered on the ceiling, and he's watching this little boy down there, and he says he guesses it's a little boy, but he doesn't know. And then you take him up to a time when Grandpa expired, and we find a little bit of chest motion, but he says it never bothered him very much anyhow. And in short, as we review this case on the track, then we start to pick up very, very valuable data. A person, for instance, who can't move on the track at all has had robbed from him so many attention units that eye is unable to boost itself back up to present time. Now, eye normally should be able to boost itself back up to present time out of some very rough engrams. Sometimes the mechanism of the mind is just unable to quite make the grade by itself, and the auditor merely says, come up to present time. The person comes up to present time. Maybe they've been riding back down the track for some time. There's that. But that is not general. The usual case is if a person is stuck on the track, you will have to go through the several mechanisms necessary to unstick him. Now, let me give you a very fast resume right here of how you unstick this person on the track. This one we'll have to cover. Because when you tell a person to close his eyes and move someplace in time, he doesn't go anyplace. You see, there's two things wrong. There's not one of two things wrong. Immediately you know there's two things wrong. His eye is pretty low on attention units. Pretty low for him to be stuck on the track at all. This man may in life be a complete powerhouse. But if he can be a complete powerhouse on the few attention units there proportionately that's available to him compared to those that should be available to him, why, this man will be a super powerhouse as soon as you get him rolling along. That's a fact. Just the simple aspect, just the simple mechanical action of unsticking him on the track probably bump his IQ 10, 15, 20 points. Just a thing. We'll have to take some psychometry to find out how much it does it on the average. But it's very interesting how it does that. So, he'll tell you, for instance, I'm stuck in present time. Sure, he's stuck in present time. Present time has been at the age of 15 years for an awful long time. Present time. Only that's not present time. He'll say, well, I'm stuck and I'm present time. Now, there are three or four methods of getting him free. You want to get him free in order to take him anyplace. And I will say that most book auditors bog down right here. They find somebody who doesn't move on the time track, and when they first read the book, and they say, well, you see, nothing can happen here. This book's a lot of horse feathers because actually nobody can move on the track. See, I can't move, and Betsy Ann here, she can't move. One of the tough things for an auditor, the toughest thing that an auditor will face in terms of cases, is a case which won't move on the track. You get in some of these cases, and boy, they're really fixed on the track. And sometimes you get them unstuck in one place, and they'll latch up in another place, and it's just sort of playing billiards with them. Out of one engram, into the other engram, and so on, you still can't get them moving on the track easily. Now, you'll run into this sort of people, and we're not interested here in teaching you how to run easy cases. You can read the book and learn how to run easy cases. This stuck on the track case is almost a normal affair. Furthermore, as you process the person, somebody else, we won't say that you would ever let the person get latched up on the track and not get him out of it, but it may happen that some other auditor comes along and sticks him on the track. And you've got the same problem all over again. This is the same problem. Somebody is stuck on the track. So you make your first test, and we find out that the person is stuck on the track. Or you pick up a case that's been in run for some time, we find out the case is stuck on the track. Same thing. Now, we want to know how to unstick the case. Now, there's a definite and specific routine of unsticking this person. This is a 1-2-3-4 proposition. You don't sit around in despair or wonder or work your imagination to death, because this is awfully easy. The first thing you do with this person is simply this. Just tell him to come up to present time. That's the first thing you do. If he doesn't move, and 98% of them won't. But remember, the 2% will. We mustn't overlook those. Can't do anything with that. You say, next thing you do is you say, now, let's go to a moment of pleasure. And try to ease him into a moment of pleasure. You don't care whether this person's stuck on the track. It wouldn't do you any good to know anyhow at this early stage of the case, because normally he's stuck in late life. So we don't have to know for this step where he's stuck or what phrase is sticking him or anything. We don't have to worry about that. All we do is tell this person he's in reverie is tell this person to go to a pleasure moment. Preferably get a moment of pleasure and triumph. When they beat up Mrs. Hogwallager's kid, when they were awarded the cup for making the best apron in social or household science class, when they were given, when the fellow maybe is a writer, when he got his first check, when anything possibly that might happen. Incidentally, it's very interesting to take people how standard these pleasure moments are. You can practically lift yourself up to the role and position of a seer. You say, well, let's go to the time that you were given this pet. And the person sort of looks like, how'd you know about that? And so on. Well, it's sort of, that's an obvious one. Very obvious. But everybody, they have a more or less a standard run of experience. I've never met anybody yet, for instance, who didn't have a moment of triumph sometime in school. I have met very few men who, as a boy, did not win at least one fight. If, by the way, I use that diagnostically, if this guy has never won a fight, this fellow's in bad shape. That's just 1-2, just like that. You look at this fellow, you run him the rest of the way on the track, you find out he's normally exteriorized and he's in pretty bad shape. Because there's something about little boys, they fight. And just by the law of averages, sooner or later, another little boy should have come along who got licked. If this never took place, it means many things. It means that Mama was a dominator, probably, or that Papa was, or that the boy was very sick when he was young, which gave a lot of chance, you know, there, for a lot of ally engrams, and which immediately spoke of a very serious prenatal bank, so on. But any vital, live boy will have won at least one fight. So you send them back to the fight and let them beat this kid up again. Now, if you can reach one of these pleasure moments, whatever the pleasure moment was, you can possibly unstick the person on the track. Because what happens is that one of the functions of the mind is to find pleasure for the organism. And when the mind starts to find pleasure for the organism, it has a tendency to go away from pain. So the attention units are liable to come out of this engram, which had him stuck on the track, and you'll get enough attention units into the pleasure moment so that you can then move him free on the track and bring him up to present time. And you always do that, by the way. You run them, if you run them into a pleasure moment and you've got them fairly well secure then in the pleasure moment and you pull them to some degree out of a painful incident, you can do just that, bring them up to present time, and you should at that time. Get them up to present time and stabilize them in present time. All right, that's one trick. Now, you understand that a person who is stuck on the track is using that for present time. So, you can try to run them into a pleasure moment. If you fail to do that and fail to get them moving that way, you go to the next step. You really ought to make a list of these because they're not written down anyplace. The next step is to try to straight wire them out of it. Give them straight line memory. You can shift over from attempts to put them into a pleasure incident to straight line memory, and back to putting them into a pleasure incident again, and back to straight line memory without doing anything very fancy, because this person's stuck on the track. It doesn't matter, you see. This person, you get this person moving, then you can bring them up to present time. So you can alternate the two when a person is stuck that way. Without bringing them out of reverie or canceling or anything else, you can put them into straight memory and into reverie and into straight memory. This is always true. It doesn't matter how many times you shift. You say, let's go to this moment, and they don't go anyplace, so you say, well, let's remember something or other. And then let's do this, and then let's remember that. And just by trying to get them to remember various moments, locks of various kinds, communication, affinity, reality breaks, things like that, just shifting back and forth there from straight memory into reverie, straight memory, trying to get them to run something else, it's sort of like putting them on stilts or something, this straight memory. It gives them an impetus. You can break a lock, maybe, and then give them a little impetus. and it sort of pries them up to present time. So that's the step that you use there. It's a combination of trying to run pleasure moments and a combination of straight wire into these affinity reality communication break locks. You get one to the other, you can generally free up enough attention units out of the place they're stuck to get them up to present time. All right, if that fails, we've got the next routine, which is a very simple routine. Person's eyes are closed, and you say, by the way, let me put a caution right here. Don't give this person a lot of holders to repeat. That is not a way to get them straightened up on the track. That is a way to get them further locked up on the track. Don't give them just holders at random to repeat. That is gruesome. Because the person says, you say, well, now let's see. What would you say a holder would be? And the fellow's just read the book, maybe, and he says, well, stay here. And so you say, all right, let's go over that. Stay here. Couldn't be anything there. Well, how about hold still? Hold still. That's n-gram 2, n-gram 3, n-gram 4, n-gram 5. Now you've got him stuck on the track in 8 places. Probability is that he was stuck on the track in several places to begin with, but you want to get him out of the main place in the track, and by giving him a repeater technique, you're going to get him stuck in a lot more places on the track. So you just leave that repeater technique alone, but you can do this. It happens quite often that the file clerk, when a person's stuck on the track and so forth, is in very good working order. File clerk's in good working order, you may even get the somatic strip to work. So what you do is just try to move the somatic strip through the engram in which they're stuck and up to a time when they were well and bring them up to present time. You just tell the somatic strip to go on through the rest of the way to the engram, go to the time they got well, and then go to present time. Works quite often. Of course, almost any one of these things may find you working well back in it. And that's very discouraging. You get the person up to present time, and then this engram says, come here, you see. And you give them an age flash a moment later, and the person is right back there where he was before. You're working a callback. So you just, and take good note of this little technique just in passing here. It's not something that you should overlook. Telling the somatic strip to go on through an engram and run the somatics in an engram. You can actually tell the somatic strip on almost anybody to go back to birth and run through birth. And without re-stimulating it particularly, the somatic strip works very nicely. You would be amazed at how handily this somatic strip works, because you cooperate with the file clerk, and the file clerk cooperates with you. You order that somatic strip. You can order the somatic strip all over the track. You can tell a somatic strip to go to the 21st of August, 1943, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Just tell it to. And then don't say, are you there? Would you like to, do you think it's gotten there yet? How do you know it is there? Don't do that to them. Just say, boom, the 21st of August, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And now, when I count from 1 to 5, a Vizio will flash. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The fellow is there. It's an interesting thing how one human being can put another human being all through the time scale. He ever looked at it as such, particularly working in Dianetics for a while. But the way it works and the preciseness with which it'll work is wonderful. But if that somatic strip won't move, then the person is really stuck hard. By telling the somatic strip to go through the rest of the engram and go to a time when the person got well, you can do this sometimes when you haven't explained these things to pre-clear. You can do this by just saying, you will. And he moves up to the time he got well. That's a technique that you should know. It has this additional side panel. Whenever you run a person back into a childhood illness and you don't know what the devil to do with it, and you haven't got time to monkey with it, and you didn't want to get there in the first place, it is often enough to run them up to a moment when they were fully recovered from that illness, 2 or 3 weeks after it took place, and stabilize them and settle them in that moment. It destimulates the illness which you have just picked. And so you can bring them on up to present time from that point. Otherwise, a situation may occur such as that which occurred up in Connecticut, where a fellow went out and got a copy of the book, and he went home and he said, I wanted this work. His deer lied down on the couch, his wife lay down on the couch, and he said, well, let's go back to a time when you were really sick. So she did, went back to a time when she had measles, and goodness, she remembered all about this, and she looked at the room and so on. He said, isn't this fascinating? Brought her up to present time. The next morning, she had measles. The only trouble with having, with the measles was that there was no respiratory disorder here. She just broke out all over with spots. We took her down to the doctor, and he said to the doctor, no, what is this? And the doctor said, well, obviously, this is a case of measles, but there's nothing wrong with the throat or nose. So they puzzled a great deal over this, and they had a big conference and a consultation, and they went at it with such efficiency and rapidity that, of course, the engram destimulated before they got anything done about it, and then they couldn't do anything about it because the measles had gone. But I just give you an idea of what will happen. So what you do in a case like that, if you get into a measles or something of the sort, is bring the person up. Sometimes you can bring them up hour by hour, day by day, up to a point where they're well. And you get them up to a point they're well. And then run that moment thoroughly. Really get them settled in that moment. Then go to a pleasure moment later than that and run them in that and bring them up to present time. And no bad effects will happen. But this is exactly parallel to this fourth method I'm giving you of getting a person unstuck on the time track. All right. So we do all this and this person is still beautifully stuck up on the track. And this is not the time to advise him to go blow his brains out. What you do then is really get down and start working. Now, the funny part of a stuck-on-the-track case is that a lot of them have, right at the exact moment they're stuck, have a Vizio and a little Sonic. Actual Sonic is sometimes right at the exact place they're stuck. Now, you start getting this, pushing this case all over the track, and getting this re-stimulated and that re-stimulated, and feeding them a lot of holders and so forth, and repeaters, something like that, and getting the case all thoroughly stirred up, that thing's going to get covered up. But sometimes when a person is stuck precisely in one engram, they have the sonic on the holder. So you just ask them to listen, see if they hear anything. Simple. And ask them to take a look. Do you see anything? And they try there for a moment, and you've picked up their attention to it, and they're liable to give you a phrase. If they give you this little phrase, stay here, or whatever it is, or I'll be right back, that's fine. Run it. They often take the tension off of it enough to move them out of the spot. Matter of fact, I think, by the way, the bulk of people just give you the averages of how many times you use what here. I have only unstuck, I think, about five people off the track by telling them to listen. But they all got unstuck very rapidly. The rest of them heard nothing, saw nothing, and so forth. And it was blank. But so you see, the method does have some efficacy. Now, if they get a little dizzy on the thing, that's fine. They might be able to identify the place. And sometimes just by identifying the place, it'll restore enough attention unit and recollection to them so they'll move out of the place right then. All right, what I'm giving you here is just the degrees of solidness with which they're stuck. These are tougher and tougher methods of getting them out. This person then suddenly recognizes where he is, bring him up to present time. Got a little sonic on the thing, he had him repeated a time or two, come on up to present time. They're unstuck off the track right then. Let me give you a caution all through here. Don't try to run a flock of physical pain engrams on this person. Anytime they're stuck on the track, if a person won't move on the track, don't go try to get another engram. You've got an engram right there. Now, sometimes, I mentioned a moment ago about the file clerk working. You'll get a good working file clerk, and a person is solidly stuck on the track, we get an age flash. Now, the way you give an age flash is a three-way affair. Most people who are stuck on the track have gotten a built-in circuit that gives back their age. This circuit will very often give itself away immediately after a birthday, and the person will keep giving his old age, whereas the file clerk would never do that. A person who consistently, for instance, dates his check 1949 when it's actually been 1950 for 2 weeks is stuck on the time track. He's got a dub-in circuit there that's giving him the date instead of the file clerk giving him the date. people who are moving and very mobile on the track don't make this mistake. So, we give the person a flash. The way to give an age flash is, how old are you? And he says, 29. Well, that's probably his right age. And you say, what's your age? Now, this circuit, you see, demon circuits are usually pretty dumb. And this circuit is probably educated to respond to, how old are you? All right, so you say, what's your age? Well, the demon circuit can't work there. That age circuit isn't working on what's your age. Boom, the fellow's right, his stuck on the track age comes through. And he says, two. Of course, you follow that with, two what? And the fellow says, 2 months, days, whatever it is. But you give this a three-way test. How old are you? What's your age? And give me a number. Those are the three questions which are asked. If you get, let us say, 29, 29, 29, on rapid flash response, this person is in present time. There's no doubt about that. The normal, of course, is to get 29, 16. But if this person has really got some fancy circuit there, and they're fixing it up so that nobody's going to find out how old he is, you get 29, 29, then give me a number, 2. I mean, why did I give you a number 2? Yeah, well, the fellow wants to know right away how come he's not following through on this 29. The reason he isn't is because he has a circuit there that's trained to what's your age and how old are you. But not one trained to give me a number. If you follow, mind you can't ask the person to give you a number and he just gives you the number 7. You expect that to be his age. You've been asking him his age. How old are you and what is your age? And boom, and then give me a number. It'll follow through on the same data. And all of a sudden, the file clerk will be able to send through his actual age. That's you working with a file clerk. The file clerk's pretty cagey. He'll work with you.
How about people like you that don't know what data?
You're probably, to some degree, stuck on the track. Now, there are your various tests. Now, if you get an age flash on this person who's stuck on the track, you want to know what happened to him in that year. And sometimes by just making him recall what happened to him during that age, he'll all of a sudden click in to the engram in which he's stuck, and you can bring him up to present time. It puts it on straight line memory. That's not too hard to do. What happened to you when you were 20? What happened to you when you were 5 years of age? Something like that. And he starts telling you this and that and so on. You can also waste a lot of time this way. If you can go on and... But you'll normally find that the age he gave you is usually terribly occluded. If it's terribly occluded, you're not ordinarily going to spring him out of there just by making him remember what happened to him. But he, let's say we got the age flash. Let's take one particular case, a man of 45 who kept giving the age flash of 29. And by working with this person for a long while, we're finally able to find out a long while for anything like this, about 15 minutes, trying to find out what happened to him in his 29th year. And at first, he didn't know what had happened to him from the time he was 25 to 34. And by using straight wire on the thing, I finally made him recall the period by asking him apparently disrelated questions. For instance, who gave you your first job? Now, all of a sudden, we get the network and the sequence, the chronological sequence of jobs there. So we finally spot who he was working for when he was 29, whether he liked the job or not, who the boss reminded him of. We start getting his mind picked up on his 29th year. Now, what happened to you in that year? When were you sick? Did you have an accident, something like that? And all of a sudden, he says, oh, yes, that's... Chapter's next case, it says, all of a sudden, he says, by the way, this fellow had had about 50 hours of processing and nobody could get him budged on the track. Yes, appendicitis. That's when I had my appendix out. Up to this time, there was no record of an appendectomy on his case. All of a sudden, appendicitis, when he was 29 years of age. So, he got a Vizio immediately on his room, on the nurse, and he picked up a sonic on the nurse telling him to, hey, he'd have to stay there. He kept trying to go home, and the nurse said it wouldn't let him go home. He finally picked up a little sonic on the darn thing. But, oh, that was a tough one. And by the way, even after that was found, this fellow would still wind up when he was 29. He really liked this nurse. So, there is an example of how you do it. Now, if your file clerk is working, you can get this sort of a routine. If that doesn't work out too well, only that really should. But you get this sort of a routine going. He's stuck on the track. File clerk's working somewhat, but we get his age all right, but we get no clue as to the incident he's stuck in. We can't refresh his memory in any way, so we start asking for flash responses on this order. You ask them any question which can be answered yes or no, which will refer to accidents, injuries, or any kind of an engram. So what you do there, you say, hospital? Or give me yes or no on the following. A hospital? The fellow says no. Doctor? No. Fever? Yes. Home? No. Office? Yes. Now we start figuring out from this, and we start building the personnel in the engram, and just with yes, no responses, by your series of questions, you can get the entire nature of the engram and everything that took place. You build it back. Now you've got the data. It requires a rather fulsome questioning by the auditor, but he can get the data of what it is. Now, just by getting this data usually isn't enough to free the person out of that place, because this engram is usually in the bank in this fashion. Getting him unstuck here. Here's your time track, conception, open sequence, birth, and here's a whole series of late life engrams, and here's present time up here at the top, and let's say he's stuck here at the age of 13, and you want to know what happened at the age of 13, and so on, and he isn't, you finally get more or less what happened, and you've got this incident into view. Whether you got it into view or not isn't wholly. It isn't vital for the rest of what I'm going to tell you here. But you've got this pretty well into view, and what you're trying to do is get this engram out of there. You could even have contacted the holders in the engram, and so on, and he still won't move out of that engram. That is almost normal in this operation. What happened is your 13-year-old engram here is actually a very solid chain, and the person has gotten stuck on the track in the middle or at the end of a chain instead of the early part of a chain. Now, you know how an engram behaves. If you hit them in the very early part of the chain, you can reduce them. If you hit them at the very beginning of the chain, and the beginning of the chain is in basic area, you can erase them. But not when they're halfway up the chain. You hit this 13-year-old engram then, and it says yak, 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 and you want to get him out of this thing, and you've got the holder, and you know where it is, and everything. You make him repeat the holder, and you try to de-intensify this thing, and it just doesn't de-intensify. He just stays right there. That's because this 13-year-old engram is actually in a pile of engrams, like this. Now, don't lose your head at this point and say, well, that's just too bad. This is the simplest of the simple. What you do is ask the file clerk, is this the first engram on the chain? That's just a test whether or not because you want the answer. Of course, the file clerk, if he's working, will tell you no. All right. The odd part of it is if it is stacked in a chain and he is stuck at 13 years of age, you can go right back down the same chain in which he's stuck. You take a little tension off of the engram in which he's stuck. You just run the thing just a little bit. And tell him to go to an earlier engram. The file clerk will now give us an earlier engram. And you get it. In other words, you can go back down the track through this chain. Now, don't overlook that. That's the point where most auditors foul up. They go through all this rigmarole of getting somebody. They locate the engram and everything else, and then they try to repeat it out of existence. They try to handle it like this, and all of a sudden, they evidently consider this as being an entirely foreign new thing, a hugbug.
not an engram. It's just an engram, and it is probably at a late position on the chain. Usually, as a matter of fact, and if you can't get him out of there by straight wire or any of these other dodges and get him moved up to present time, then you'd better walk down that chain and get the earliest engram in it. Now, here's another thing about working with a file clerk. Sometimes the file clerk is forced into telling you a lot. You, as the auditor, tell the file clerk that you want the earliest incident on this chain. And the file clerk will give you an earlier incident. But it's not the earliest incident. This is a compromise between you and the file clerk. You're telling him to give you the earliest incident on this chain. And you ask the file clerk, yes or no, is this the earliest incident on the chain? And the file clerk says, yes. And you run this incident. Well, the funny part was, you forced the file clerk to tell you a lie. The chances are, as you go down one of these chains, that the file clerk can't get to the bottom of the chain without getting de-intensified on the way a couple or three engrams on this chain. So he gives you the first engram of the chain necessary to de-intensify so that he can get to the beginning of the chain, the basic. And I've seen a file clerk give 6 consecutive engrams out, each one as the earliest on the chain, because each one had to be de-intensified. I hope this point's very clear to you. It's a very simple point. You tell the file clerk, here's this person stuck on the track, way up the track someplace, and you tell the file clerk, you say, now give us the earliest incident on this chain. And the file clerk actually comes up with an earlier incident. You tell the somatic strip to go to the beginning of the incident. When you count from 1 to 5, the first phrase, the incident flash into mind, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you get that, and you're running an incident. And you start running this incident, and all of a sudden, you would assume, now, the file clerk gave you the earliest incident, you're sure of that. But you ordered the file clerk to get it. And you have to work with a file clerk. The file clerk is not under your orders. The file clerk is your partner in trying to get these engrams out of the pre-clear. Not your slave. That's somatic strip. You can order the somatic strip, or the file clerk can order the somatic strip. File clerk does very often. That's what freewheeling is. Now, so, you say the earliest engram on the chain. The file clerk will give you the earliest engram that has to be de-intensified on the chain to get to earlier engrams. So, you take the tension off whatever the file clerk gives you. You take the tension off, you reduce it if you can. And sometimes you have to run one that can't be reduced or erased. Sometimes you have to run it a couple of times in order for the file clerk to give you the earlier one on the chain. So, never make the mistake of taking just the first thing the file clerk gives you is the earliest one when you told the file clerk what to do. You say, give me the earliest engram on the chain. The file clerk gives you an engram. Now, you run it a couple of times. Don't assume that was the early one. You can go back up the track now. You say to the file clerk, is this the earliest engram? The file clerk will sometimes tell you yes when it has to be run a couple of more times. But then you ask again, is this the earliest engram? All of a sudden you get a no. The other one's in sight now. So you say, all right, the file clerk will give you the earliest engram, which can be reached to resolve this chain. Now, the somatic strip will go to the beginning of the earliest engram on a count from 1 to 5. The first phrase will flash into your mind, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You get the first phrase and find your earlier on the thing. Now you reduce that one. You get that one 2 or 3 passes on the thing, and it apparently is not going to reduce terrifically, but you at least get 2 or 3 passes on it. Was this the earliest one? No, you told the file clerk that it was. The file clerk didn't tell you that it was, so you have to go earlier. And you can expect to work back this way and that way. I have gone down a chain of about 25 engrams, one by one by one by one, getting down, having to de-intensify a little bit out of each one in order to get the basic on the chain. Finally got the basic on the chain. It was in basic area. The person, I'm talking about an actual case now, the person was stuck at 13, and it took superhuman wit trying to find where the hell it was. And the file clerk finally just got tired of being fooled with and gave up the information. That was a weird one. By the way, I said the file clerk will now give us the month in which this occurred, And instead of the month, I got tonsillectomy. The person said, tonsillectomy, but I'd never had my tonsils out. I said, open your mouth. They were missing. That's like a dub-in case, by the way, one time that used to get run over all the time. I mean, he was run over by everything. And one time he was lying there telling about this awful travail he'd had and so forth. And it seemed like this thing had gone right straight across his throat and so on. And they'd had to take 48 stitches in it. And auditor just reached over and pulled his collar down a little bit and let him go on talking. No scar. All right. When a person's stuck on the track with great solidness, then you can expect, just as a routine affair, that the person is stuck in a chain of engrams, and that there are earlier engrams that have to be reduced before you can get them loose off the chain. So it's a question of walking back. If you can't get them walking back or something like that, just keep on using straight wire. Try to knock out enough affinity, reality, and communication break lock until the person finally has enough attention units to come up to present time. I had an awful tough time with a pre-clear one time until I told the file clerk to give me present time, and the file clerk did. So what I'm warning you about there is that any time from there on out, you may tell the pre-clear to come to present time or the file clerk to give you present time or something like that and find out that you've got present time. You've gotten to a point where this case had enough alertness to move on the track. All right. The thing that you've got to do first before you can do any great deal with reverie is to get the person moving on the track. That's why you test their perceptics, why you try to find some pleasure moments and so forth. Occasionally, you will enter a case with reverie which is actually stuck on the track and will become unstuck before you notice the case is stuck. I've had that happen, and checking back over on the behavior of the pre-clear a couple of moments before and the behavior of the pre-clear now, I see it's entirely different. The facial expression and so forth. You just put the pre-clear in reverie, and by telling them to go to last night, they don't go from present time to last night. They go from the engram in which they're stuck to last night. That's one thing that you see. You weren't telling, or you didn't ascertain where the person was. You just told them to go someplace, and they went. All right. The Compliac expert and certified auditor who doesn't know how to unstick a person on the track might as well just give up his ghost as far as his efficiency is concerned, because, more than half, certainly, of the people he runs into is going to be stuck on the track. Additionally, as he goes through processing and so on, he's going to find his case occasionally stuck on the track, and he's going to have to go through this whole routine trying to get him unstuck. Now, I'll give you a word of warning on this. Never leave your pre-clear stuck on the track if you found him moving on the track. If you found him moving on the track, don't leave this pre-clear stuck on the track at the end of the session. This pre-clear can be moved on the track, and you must bring him back up to present time. You must always check a pre-clear, particularly one that you don't know well. You don't know this case well. After a while, you can get careless on this if you know your case well. And that is to say, the person ordinarily comes to present time and stays in present time and doesn't get called back down the track. But on a new case, or one that you're not too sure of, or one that has difficulty moving on the track anyhow, check 2 or 3 minutes after they came to present time to find out if they're still in present time. The way you bring a person to present time is to run a pleasure moment, which is part of standard procedure, and then bring them to present time, and then give them straight memory on all the processing that you gave them during the last 2 hours. Make them recall this, not by telling them or assisting their memory, because this undermines the person's self-determinism. You tell them just to remember these things, and they can remember these things, and they'll go on, they'll remember the processing and so forth. They're in present time. That inhibits a callback, but you want to test You want to give them age flashes. What is your age? How old are you? Give me a number. All three figures agree that person is in present time. All right, so you give them your camphor and bring them up out of it, and they're sitting there and they're going to talk to you about, gee, they didn't know that they had ever drowned their grandmother's kittens, and they start telling you about this sort of thing. All of a sudden you say, how old are you? Certain percentage of your cases are going to suddenly say, seven. Callback is activated. What you do on something like that then is they were not sufficiently stabilized. You run more pleasure moments and you go through the same routine that I'm giving you, have been giving you here this morning. You go through the same routine and get them into present time, and so they'll stay there and be stable in present time. Now, of course, a case that you've just started for the first time, you find this person stuck on the track and being called back to earlier engrams on the track and all sorts of things like that, it very well may be that you won't be able to get them unstuck in the first session, of course. It may take you many sessions to get them unstuck. The longest number of sessions I have seen anybody stuck on the track is 80 hours worth. 80 hours of being stuck on the track. This person, by the way, had somewhere close to 100 insulin shocks. And he was stuck in the last one. And the auditors just were going crazy trying to get this down. By the way, I told somebody back east to write up insulin shocks and electric shock machines so that you'd have the standard routine of what doctors ordinarily say around them. It's just pulling it apart. It's pretty yakky, and there's lots of it. All right, but on this stuck on the track proposition, the thing which the auditor is concerned in with is fluidity on the track. Now we examine the mind and we find out that there are several things that can take attention units away from I. Communication, reality, and affinity break lock. Communication, reality, affinity, secondary engram. These take the attention units away. Mind you, both of these depend on physical pain engrams, but the things which the acts and actions which charge up the reactive mind and charge up and separate I and take attention units away from I and starve I down, get I so weak that I can't move on his own time track. These things are communication, reality, and affinity break locks, or affinity, reality, communication, secondary engrams. That secondary engram includes grief engrams, so on. We call those secondary engrams. Grief engrams, these various upsets, apathy engrams, and so on. These take the attention units away from I and ball them up in a ball with the physical pain engram, and there isn't enough attention left. The person can't move smoothly on the track. So whenever you find anybody sticking on the track, the degree of seriousness with which they're stuck does not depend upon the seriousness of the engram in which they're stuck. Okay, and ask the file clerk again. If you're working from the file clerk, just try to get the person back a little bit earlier. If the file clerk isn't working, get the bottom one off the chain. I just give you that in passing, the word of caution. All of this I've been telling you this morning has been intimately associated with standard procedure. This is standard procedure. Trying to give you some expanded points in standard procedure. Make it a little more standard for you. Make it work a little bit better. Now, we have talked quite a bit this first hour in terms of affinity, communication, and reality break locks. And we have talked about secondary engrams. Now, in the next hour, having given you this close an entrance into standard procedure, I'm going to give you a better understanding of what those engrams are exactly, and I'm going to give you the tone scale, you might say, of communication and the tone scale of reality, as well as the tone scale of affinity, which you already have. Okay, let's take a breather.